Hello, and welcome to the New World Witchery Folk Magician's Notebook episode for November 2023. These are short monthly episodes that will offer a brief overview of folk magical topics and information that might be useful to you over the coming month. As always, we highly recommend that you also pick up a copy of a reputable and reliable almanac for folk magic, such as the Witch's Almanac, Llewellyn's Witch's Datebook, or your local Farmer's Almanac. Let's take a look at the moon for November of 2023. The new moon for November will be on November 13th in the sign of Scorpio. Our November full moon is November 27th in the sign of Gemini, and it's often known as the Frost Moon, the Whitefish Moon, or most commonly, the Beaver Moon. Some notable astrological dates. We begin the month waning away from late October's full moon in the sign of Gemini, and quickly move through Cancer and Leo in the first week. This is a good time to do some drying of herbs, or especially of seeds and nuts that you'll be keeping for use over the winter. It's also a good time to bring in some plant cuttings or potted plants before the frosts get too heavy. Keep an eye out for waning energy and lethargy as well, and find some quiet but stimulating activities to keep you engaged and interested. The moon shifts into Libra and Virgo from the 7th through the 11th, which is a good time to prune and fertilize any winter garden residents. You can also do some bad habit bindings to help you dissipate things that aren't helping you or are actively hindering you. The tide of energy shifts on the 12th and the 13th as the moon becomes new and enters Scorpio. This is a wonderful time for divination, working shadowy magics, and generally maximizing your witchery. Do some scrying, take some luxuriant baths and decadent magical formulae, and really feel the power return to your body. The shift into Sagittarius immediately after will also add some fuel to your socializing fires if you need it, and allow you to get out and get things done. It's both a good time to have a beer with friends or start an alcohol cleanse, as Sag oversees the liver. We're in Capricorn and Aquarius from the 16th through the 20th, with a lot of good, steady energy for getting long-term work done. It's also a good time to ask advice from trusted and pragmatic friends and for doing a bit of journaling and mental housekeeping. The moon waxes in Pisces, Aries, and Taurus from the 21st through the 26th, meaning it's a time to enrich your life. Do any final fertilizing of winter garden crops, but also do some things that make you feel nourished as well. Spend some time with hobbies, or making good homemade meals. Make some art, write, sing, build things, tinker, or otherwise allow yourself to feel like you're growing and developing into the person you want to be. The moon is full on the 27th in Gemini, which means you'll have a lot of inspiration, but possibly little direction. So the more you can give yourself structure leading up to that, the better off you'll be. Finally, the month sees us ending with a waning moon in Cancer on the 29th and 30th. And it will be time to settle in and spend time at home or with friends and loved ones if you can, quietly enjoying their company. And maybe a cup of cocoa. Now we'll take a look at cards, divination, and proverbs for the month. Each month, Lane and I will pull a card for one another, a playing card and a tarot card or otherwise oracle card. We'll indicate the meanings of those cards in general and then read them for the other person specifically as a way to get a sense of how they are read in actual practice.
For this month's card reading, I pulled the Six of Hearts. According to Corey's book, 54 Devils, the card has a few at-a-glance meanings, like a dog, loyalty, and stamina. Read with other cards, this card symbolizes longevity in that querent situation. The question I had asked was, what should Corey be focused on in his life now? And I read the answer as his friends and relationships that he feels conjure those emotions of loyalty and longevity. Of course, I've noticed over the course of the year that I've gotten a lot of hearts in Corey's readings. A good benefit to doing these monthly readings is that you start to know your cards better, obviously, but you start to notice patterns when reading the same people as well. Hearts often deal with emotions, and these cards can often represent someone in particular that is important in that querent's life. Also, perhaps this is too on the nose, but Corey did just lose his beloved greyhound, Bodhi. He was a good boy and definitely worth mentioning one last time. Rest in peace, Bodhi.
This month, pulling tarot for Lane, I pulled the Two of Swords. In general, this is the card of indecision and executive dysfunction. A person sits on a chair, eyes bound, facing away from the sea behind them, while holding two swords crossed in an angle and pointing in opposite directions. This is divergent paths, but even more than that, it's weighing two equally valid choices, or two choices about which you have equal information, and not being able to decide. Crucially, though, this also represents a crossroads, a liminal space between land and sea, with two directions meeting. For Lane, then, I see this as a prompt to be bold and decisive this month. When weighing options, let your gut pick for a while. Even if you feel like it may not be the choice everyone wants, go in a decisive direction and follow through. Otherwise, you just stay at the crossroads and never get to make the progress you need. Our folk divination method of the month is a game called The Red Book. This is one of those sleepover game-style divination techniques that basically combines the spooky elements of spirit contact games like Sarah Sarita and Ouija with basic bibliomancy. In order to do this form of divination, you need at least two people and a book with a hardback red cover, and few to no pictures inside. It should be mostly or all text. And also a candle. You should extinguish all lights except the candle, and place the book in the center of the people playing. Each person takes a turn holding the red book and asking, red book, may I enter your game? They will then flip open to a random page and put their finger down without looking. The sentence upon which they land should be read aloud and interpreted by all present as to whether or not the book is allowing that person to play. If it is a yes, then the person is in the game. If it is a no, then they will have to wait until another turn to ask again. The book is then passed to the next person, and the question about entry is repeated, with answers being interpreted until all participants have been given a yes to enter the game. If someone is given a constant no, they should excuse themselves from the game, and the remaining players should proceed to play and make sure to close the game when finished. Once everyone is in, the book is passed from player to player. A player not holding the book will ask a question, and the person holding the book will flip to a random page and put a finger down without looking, then read that sentence or passage aloud. All present will then interpret the answer related to the question. This continues until everyone has had a chance to ask the questions they want. When everyone is done, the book is then asked, red book, may I leave your game? In the same manner as the opening, with players asking the book themselves. Do not leave the room or put the book away until everyone has been allowed to exit the game. In theory, of course, this game could be played solo, but it's much more fun in a group. Our witch's proverb of the month. Forget safety. Live where you fear to live. Destroy your reputation. Be notorious. A quote in translation from Rumi. Our folktale this month is The Dauntless Girl, a tale from Norfolk. She first lived with a farmer, and he and his friends were drinking one night, and they ran out of liquor. So the farmer, he up and says to her, "Never you mind. My girl will go down to the pub and bring us another bottle." But the night was very dark, so his friends said, "Surely she'll be afeard to go out by dark in such a night all by herself alone." But he says, "No, she won't, for she's afeard of nothing that's alive or dead." So she went out and brought them back their liquor, and his friends said that it was a very funny thing that she should be so shrewd and so bold. But the farmer said, "Well, that's nothing, for she'd go anywhere day or night. She ain't afeard of nothing, alive or dead." And he offered to bet a golden guinea that none of them could name a thing she would not do. So one of them agreed to take the bet, and they were to meet the same day, as it might be next week, and he was to set her to task. Meanwhile, he went to the old parson and borrowed the keys of the church, and then went to the old sexton and right-sided it with him for half the guinea to go into the church and hide himself in the dead house, so that he was to frighten the dauntless girl when she came. So when they all met together at the farmer's, he said, "This is what the dauntless girl won't do. She won't go into the church alone at midnight. Go into the house of the dead and bring back a skull bone." But she made no trouble up about it, and went down to the church all along of herself, and she opened the door of the dead house, and she picked up a skull bone. Well, just then the old sexton from behind the door muffled out, "Let that be, that's my mother's skull bone." So she put it down and she picked up another. Well, then the old sexton muffled out again, "Let that be, that's my father's skull bone." Well, so she put that one down too, and she took up another, and she said out loud, for she'd lost her temper, "Father or mother, sister or brother, I must have a skull bone, that's my last word." And so she up and walked out with it, and she locked the door of the dead house behind her, and she came home, and she put the skull bone on the table and said, "There's your skull bone, mister," and she went back to her work. But he that made the bet said, "Didn't you hear nothing, Mary?" "Yeah," she said, "some fool of a ghost called out to me, 'Let that be, that's my father's skull bone. Let that be, that's my mother's skull bone.' I told him right, 'Father or mother, sister or brother, I must have a skull bone.' So here I took it, and here it be, and then I was going away, and after I locked the door, and I heard the old ghost a-hollering and a-shrieking like mad." Then him who's made the bet was sore upset, for he guessed it was the old sexton hollering for fear of being locked up alone in the dead house. And so it was, when they ran down to let him out, they found him lying stone dead on his face, dead of fright. It served him right to try and terrify the poor mother. But her mister, he got himself the golden guinea he'd won. A little while after, down in Suffolk, there was a squire and his mother, a very old lady, and she died and was buried. But she would not rest and kept a-coming up to the house, especially at meals. Sometimes you could see all of her, sometimes not all, but you'd see a knife and a fork get up off the table and play about where her hands should be. Well, now this upset the servants so much they would not stop, and the squire was sadly put to as to know what to do. Then one day he heard of the dauntless girl, 3 villages off, who was feared of nothing. So he rode over and told her all about it and asked if she would come as a servant, and she paid no regard to the ghost, so she said she'd come, but that it ought to be considered for her wages. And so it was. And she went back with the squires. First thing she did was to always lay a place regular for the ghost at meals, and took great care not to put the knife and fork crisscrossways. And she laid out the table just as if there were a real person coming to dinner. And she would say, "Pepper mum, or salt mum, as it might be." Well, this fared to please the old ghost, but nothing came of it until the squire had to go up to London on some law business. Next day the dauntless girl was down on her knees a-cleaning the parlour grate when she noticed a thing pushing through the door, which was just ajar and open out wide when it got into the room. And she turned to the old ghost. And the ghost, she up and she spoke for the first time and said, "Mary, are you afeard of me?" And the girl said, "No, mum. I've no call to be afeard of you, for you're dead and I'm alive," which fairly flummoxed the old ghost. But she went on and said, "Mary, will you come down to the cellar along with me? You must bring a light and I'll show you something new." So they went down to the cellar, and she shone the old lantern, and when they got there, she pointed some loose tiles and said, "Pick you up those tiles." And she did. And there were 2 bags of gold, one big one and one little one. And she said, "Mary, the big bag's for your master, and the little bag's for you are a dauntless girl and deserve it." Then off went the old ghost, and she was never seen no more, and the dauntless girl came back up out of the cellar. And in 3 days' time back there came the squire, and he said, "Morning, Mary, have you seen anything of my mother since I've been away?" And she said, "Yes, sir, I have. If you weren't afraid of coming down to the cellar along with me, I'll show you something." And he laughed and said he weren't afraid, for she were the dauntless girl, and she were a very pretty girl. And so the little candle went down. She opened up the tiles and said, "Well, there are 2 bags of gold. The little one's for you, and the big one's for me." And he said, "Lord," for he thought his mother might have given him the big one, and so she had, but he took what he could. And so the dauntless girl, she always afterwards crossed the knives and forks on the plates to keep the ghosts from telling what she had done. But after a while, the squire thought it over, and he married the dauntless girl. So, after all, he got both bags of gold. The end. I love a good story with a fearless woman in the protagonist role. The Dauntless Woman is one of a number of tales that fall under the person who knew no fear tales, most of which tend to feature a young man in the driver's seat. Often in these stories, the fearless person is tasked with facing the dead, or a devil, or a demon, or a dismembered giant. Yes, really. And always their fearlessness is what sees them through right to the end. But I think that there can be a bit of misapprehension when we tell these tales. The protagonist doesn't know what fear is, and so faces things fearlessly. But for those of us who do know fear, we might understand just how debilitating that fear can be. There's no shame in admitting fear or knowing what we are afraid of. In witchcraft, we are often tasked with interchange with spirits of or the dead or other beings that many would shy away from. One thing I've often said is that one of the main points of my own practice is to face my fears through witchcraft, not to ignore them or even overcome them, but acknowledge them and give them the space they deserve. Often that will also allow me to work with them, shape my magic according to what I need. I might avoid a particular set of spirits because I know I'm not ready to work with them, acknowledging my own fear of failure and recognizing that that fear would be something that would interfere with the relationship and the working. Or I might acknowledge I fear something within myself, a problematic tendency to overthink and have a chattering mind, for example. Recently, I've been working in therapy on just that, and facing and acknowledging it is giving me a better sense of how I can see more parts of myself more clearly, and possibly even enhance those pieces of me that thrive on magic in new ways, say by finding the right music or movement to calm that chattering while I work on a spell. I'm not saying I have all the answers, of course, but I am taking my cue from the Dauntless Girl and telling those things trying to hold me back that I must do what I must do and move forward from there, even with fear in hand sometimes. I hope that if you're listening to this as we come through the spooky waning light of the year, that you get the chance to face your own fears soon and find the Dauntless Girl in you.
We'll finish up our notebook entry with a little charm or craft each month to add a practical element to your work. This time, a full moon bath salt. The feeling of soaking in a warm bath is already relaxing and rejuvenating, but adding a bit of magic to the bath can do wonders as well. There are a lot of different bath formulas you can use, so we'll just be covering the basics of making one here using a full moon mixture, but you can customize and tweak it to your liking. The simple formula is to combine a cup of Epsom salts, available at most pharmacies, a cup of sea salt, and a teaspoon of baking soda in a container. Then add any dried botanicals you would like to, such as dried flower petals, ground up as much as possible. You can grind them with some of the salt to help in the process. Then add any essential oils you would like, just a few drops into the mixture, stirred thoroughly. For a full moon mixture, we recommend mugwort, if you aren't allergic, white rose petals, and a bit of lavender or rosemary. A few drops of gardenia or jasmine oil would be a nice add-in too. Mingle all the salts together and let it dry together under the light of the full moon, then seal and keep in a cool, dry place. When you are ready to use it, run a warm bath and add a cup of the salts to the water, stirring a bit to dissolve the salt. Then soak yourself in the water, absorbing its power. Traditionally, if you want to draw the energy into you, you should stand in the bath and wash yourself from feet or legs up to the top of your head. Then finish up and keep a cup of the bathwater to toss into the light of the rising sun in the east. You can certainly change out your botanicals and oils as you wish, and enjoy your bath.
That's it for this entry into your new World Witchery Folk Magician's Notebook. Thank you so much for joining us this month. We hope that you've had a wonderful spooky season so far, and that you are facing your fears and finding the Dauntless Girl in you. If you'd like to help support the show and our work, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/newworldwitchery. $1 a month, or whatever you can afford, will help us keep going. You get some fun little perks on the side as well with that. If you'd like to find out more about us, you can visit us at newworldwitchery.com, where we have over 200 episodes, over 200 articles as well on folk magic, all of our social media links and everything there as well, especially if you go to newworldwitchery.com/find-us. And you can always listen to one of our sister shows as well. We have Chasing Foxfire, which has been on hiatus, but covers the intersections of folklore and other fields such as art, music, literature, etc. And we have our Myth Taken, a Buffy the Vampire Slayer podcast, where Lane and I discuss the show Buffy the Vampire Slayer and break it apart episode by episode, as well as looking at things like myths and folklore entangled in that show. So if you're a fan of Buffy, check it out. And I think that will about do it for us this month. Oh, I should mention, we do have a new book out. Lane and I co-wrote the book, Conjuring the Commonplace, A Guide to Everyday Enchantment and Junk Drawer Magic. That is now available from Thousand Volt Press or wherever books are sold. So please do check that out. We would love for you to pick up that book and maybe find some folklore and magic in your everyday life in some objects that maybe you weren't expecting. So, as always, we are very appreciative of you listening to us and choosing our show. We hope that this has been useful to you, that you get something fun out of it, and we can't wait to talk to you again. So until next time, thanks for listening. Be well.